Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Right now on the BT and Sal show, we welcome in the man whose number hangs an hour after zero in the Mike Francesa studio, Alex Rodriguez. What's up, A-Rod?
What's up, Sal? What's up, BT? Good to be here, man.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you. I appreciate you doing this. We certainly appreciate you doing this, and we got a chance to talk some ball here. I mean, listen, Alex, everybody's going to have a rough night. So the game one, you know, Heel hadn't pitched in a while. Yankees got smacked around. Weaver obviously didn't get the job done. What happened yesterday was stunning to me, and I want to start here. The Yankee at bats, or their approach is all out of whack. What are you seeing? Because they just look like a different team.
Yeah, no, BT. Look, I'll tell you this. I was shocked by Max Fried. I thought he would come up and throw a big game, but you know he's human and that's an egg. But what I wasn't surprised is a top tier type pitcher. Dominating this offense. Now, we never knew that this U Savage guy would be that good, but he had him dancing in a rocking chair all night with the changeup split. It reminded me of Mike Scott against the Mets back in the 86 series. It was, you know, incredible.
You know, A-Rod, speaking my language, 86 Mets, we'll get into a year to remember a little bit later on, as I know that's a common bond that we have. How challenging is that for a team? Is that more on the pitcher just being as nasty as can be? Or is that the offense struggling? Is it the first time matchup? Like, do you expect a different result if there's a game five? Take me through the mind of a hitter when facing a pitcher as nasty as that for the first time.
It's hard, right? Because here's a young man who had 23 starts. 14 of those were an A-ball. So that's a gift and a curse because no one has any experience against him. Usually, the more you see a pitcher, advantage starts to, you know, tilt towards the hitter. But nevertheless, I mean, 11 strikeouts in five innings and eight of them on that change split, it was like they could not see it. They couldn't pick it up. He also has a very unique over-the-top delivery, which you don't see very often. And he had him dancing. But you know... The most frustrating part, guys, is that when you look at the barometer, right? Let's use 09 because that's the last time we won a title. 1 through 7, we had the same lineup basically for 5 years. You go from Jeter, Damon, Tex, A-Rod, Matsui, Posada, and Cano. Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about 2004, what happened, the meltdown, the tragic meltdown, right, which I was right in the center of, you know, we had to feel ourselves off the ground. And 5 years later in 09, we had exactly the same roster. Now, what happened in 04, there wasn't much continuity. We were all new to the thing. And at the end of the day, we had a bunch of great players. And I said last night in the telecast, great players do not win titles. Great teams do. And in 04, we had great players. But in 09, we finally became a team and finished the mission.
I got to tell you, I love the way you framed that. And Derek even said something very similar. Listen, of course, Aaron Judge is going to get all the heat here. Even though he's got a high average, he's not hitting with any sort of oomph. He's not really banging the ball around the yard. And Derek said, hey, listen, and he ran through every single name, you know, 1 through 9. It's everybody's fault. A lot of empty at bats here. And it only is going to get worse made by the pressure. And nobody can speak to the pressure more than you. So what do you think that back to Judge, what do you think the Judge is feeling at this point? Championship-less, still an amazing player and a game away from being bounced. What is he thinking right now? What does he feel tomorrow night?
Well, I mean, baseball is a unique sport, right? It's unlike, you know, Tom Brady coming down and he has the ball, or Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan. They ultimately control the last play because it's in their hands. The greatest player of all time is Barry Bonds. He never won a title. Here's what I can tell you guys is that I had incredible players around me. And, you know, we are lucky to be witnessing one of the greatest players of all time, one of the greatest human beings that I've ever been around as a young player. When I was, you know, he started to come up and I just started seeing his habits, the way he behaves. I mean, he is one of a kind. And I think it's a mistake if all we want to talk about is, you know, his shortcomings. The way you get Judge going is you got to have, everyone talks about who's hitting behind him. What's more important is who's hitting in front of him. And he had a one situation with a base loaded. He came up short. He made a bastard pitch 3-2 split. I think the mistake on that at bat, and that means that when you're a little bit on your heels, he got the best pitch was a fastball right down Broadway and he didn't budge. And I knew after he took that, that was the last good pitch he was going to see. And that was the case. But the more you can get guys in front of him, create traffic, Aaron Judge is never going to be your problem. And you're looking at a roster here that in the course of 6 or 7 years, he's going to play with like 150 different guys. There's no continuity. He's the only guy standing. Now imagine a world where you have Soto, like you had last year, Soto and Judge. Wouldn't it be nice to have that for 3 or 4 years? You have a one and out. It's hard to build continuity that way.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We're talking with Alex Rodriguez. Catch him on the Fox pre- and post-game show. Does a great job alongside Kevin Burkhardt, our friend, Big Poppy, Derek Jeter there. By the way, A-Rod, like, do you have to pick the Yankees every time? You and Jeter picking the Yankees. Like, we get
I can't
it.
Help myself, yeah, Sal.
Come on, you're a Mets fan. You grew up a Mets fan. Be unbiased with the picks.
Yeah. Well, I would. Listen, Mets are my second favorite team. You know, I grew up a Mets fan. Hernandez and Doc and Strawberry. But, you know, the Mets are in Cancun already. I can't cheer for them.
And, of course, we learned that from Juan Soto's Instagram post. So let me just ask you flat out. You think this series is over?
No, I don't. I don't. Look, they've been atrocious up in Rogers. I don't know what the hell's going on up there. But I heard you guys earlier that you guys are both correct. And, by the way, you guys do a great job. I really enjoy listening to you guys. Really smart stuff. I just tune off when you guys talk football because I'm not a football guy. But
why? Why the Canes are the Canes finally looking good? Yeah. Not that we get into that, but I'm sure you're into that.
Sal, thank God. My Hurricanes, we've had a bunch of head fakes the last 15 years, and we're finally back, and we're number two, and I'm just praying to God we can get the glory days back.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's over. Look, they've been terrible up there. They're 1-7. They've actually dominated the Jays here at home in the Bronx. They've won 4 out of 6. And all it takes is one game to change this thing. You know, Derek's been talking about it, Jeter, on the telecast the last few nights. Is, you know, October is about momentum and is about narratives. And you throw a big shutdown, you win a game 8-1, get the fans going. You got Cam going game 4, and you never know. If you're Max Fried, you just want one more chance at it. But it starts with one win, one pick at a time. No time to feel sorry. There's a time to be positive and try to come together as a team.
Hey, Alex, by the way, does Cam remind you of anybody in baseball history?
Boy, that performance is unbelievable. You know, Curt Schilling on his prime when it was in Phoenix and Boston. I mean, just the ability to, you know, throw that fastball that you know is coming is a straight heater. And by the way, BT, you've been on this all year. When we went to lunch, you said to me exactly, I think this guy Cam can give us 7 innings and punch out 10. So you're a bit of a prophet. But what I like most is his composure, his size. The ball comes off his hand. It comes out hot. And
yeah,
he looks like he's been there, and he looks like a winning player, and he's got the composure of a champion. But the biggest thing this roster can do, hey, look, it's a really strange roster when you have 3 catchers, you have a handful of DHs. It's just really hard to navigate. And I think Boone gets way too much flack. I think he's a good manager. I said this joking around in jest, but I kind of mean it. You take all the bean counters in the month of October, you lock them up in a boiler room and let them stay there till mid-November. If you're Cashman, you know, trust your fans, trust your manager, trust your players. No micromanaging. You got to have instincts and you have to have guts.
Yeah.
You have to trust your eyes.
I want to follow up on Boone. All right. So, Torrey had an amazing array of players, okay? Girardi, we talked about 09, had an amazing 1-7, and CeCe comes in, Burnett comes in. We know what they had, champions, right? To me, Aaron Boone's had 1 million first basemen, 1 million third basemen, 1 million left fielders, 5 catchers, 5 center fielders, 4 different closers. I'm not saying he's Miller Huggins, Alex. I'm not even saying he's necessarily Joe Torre. But the heat that Boone gets, like, to me, show me, and it might be this series, quite frankly, but show me the series that Aaron Boone has lost that he was supposed to win, where he was favored. I don't think there's many of those series.
You know, it's funny, Sal, they talk about, you know, in politics, you talk about big government and you talk small corporate, or you talk about small corporate, big government. To me, the shift has been when Joe Torre and Lou Piniella were the managers, they had all the power. That has shifted up to the front offices. So for me, who I want to listen to after the games is not necessarily Boone, because he's not making all the decisions. I want to listen to Mike Fishman and Cashman and who's making these decisions and help the fans understand why we're doing the things. The why has to be explained. And I just feel that Boone is a mouthpiece and he's a wonderful manager. And I don't think he should be fired. I think he has an incredible future, but he's been dealt a very, very tough hand.
Yeah.
And he has to answer for front office decisions that he's not making.
Yes.
I actually think Boone's very good.
You think Cashman still has the fastball that he had a couple of years ago or 10? Do you think he's still the same effectiveness?
Well, I don't know if anyone could be the same for 30 years. I mean, that is a long time, but you know, it's, and I don't know Mike Fishman as well. He was there a little bit. I know 09, we used very, very little front office things. We, you know, Joe Girardi run shop. We had a great captain, Derek Jeter. We had continuity across the board. We knew exactly what everyone was going to do on every situation. There was no surprises. We knew who the seventh inning guy was, the eighth inning, and of course we had Mo. We knew who was going to lead off. We knew who. I'll tell you this, right before the game six of the World Series, I always had a hard time against Adrian Martinez, and I was kind of trying to think about what was going to be my game plan in game six when Andy Pettit faced Pedro. And about an hour before the game, I'm sitting there with Matsui, and I'm taping my ankles. Gene Monahan and Steve Donahue is taping his ankles. And I look over to Matsui. I said, Matsui, what are you going to do with Pedro today? What's your game plan? And he just smiled. And, you know, Matsui is just a classy act, very monotone. He says to me, I see the ball well. I said, how well? He goes, you know, I see the ball sometimes like a softball. I said, shoot, sometimes I see the ball like a golf ball, Pedro. So once he told me that 45 minutes before the game, my approach had changed. I just said, I have to pass the baton and put Matsui in a situation where he can do damage. And sure enough, two home runs, a double, and an MVP later, and a title. Mm. But that only happens with continuity and having a relationship with all your teammates.
BT and Sal on the fair. We're talking with Alex Rodriguez. Catch him on the FS1. The Fox family, pre- and post-games around these playoff games here, does a great job with Jeter, Ortiz, and, of course, Kevin Burkhardt leading the way. You know, you talk about Boone and being a manager. One of my favorite things about you, A-Rod, has always been your passion, knowledge, and love for the game. Lots of managerial openings. You thinking about diving back in at some point to be a big league manager?
No, never, never. I love the game so much. I get my fix from Fox, where I do the All-Star Game, playoffs, and World Series. And I have two daughters, one a junior in college and the other one who's a senior in high school. And I have my hands full with a lot going on.
Well, one thing you don't have to worry about is cutting those Michigan checks, because even though they're not cheap, I'm sure A-Rod's got a few bucks in the bank, huh, buddy? That college, that's not an issue for you.
Dude, hey, speaking of which, that place on Instagram, I know I've been following along on A-Rod's Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
What is that? Is that like your LA home, that pool? Oh, my God, that looks beautiful out there overlooking the hills.
Oh, man, I feel so sorry for you, Sal, if you're looking at my Instagram. I'm sorry about that.
I wanted to prep for the interview, don't you?
Anytime you're out here, you can come over. We're going to watch a little football, a little baseball, watch your Mets, watch your Jets, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, and by the way,
Sal, I'm on the next flight. I'll leave my wife and kid at home, A-Rod. Don't tempt me. I'll be out there.
Dude, he'll take you up on it, man. Trust me. He'll be knocking on your door. You'll be sitting next to Poppy and Jeets. He'll be on your doorstep.
I'll bring the food. Don't worry about it.
Alex, he said to me, when I told him we were going to lunch, he's like, what? I can't go. I'm like, no, not yet. You know, we got to do our thing. Is Sal, can he come to the next one or no?
By the way, absolutely. Sal's always invited. And BT, we got to go back to that place.
That was
place
good.
Is outstanding with great pasta.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I could have had five beers there instead of two. I know you just got back from vacation. let me ask you about this here. Back to Boone and back to two things that bother me. Number one, Luke Weaver is unpitchable at this point, in my opinion. And then obviously you tell me if you disagree. That's the first thing. And when you're going to have a younger pitcher go into a situation that he's not accustomed to, like Will Warren coming in with two on, nobody out, in the middle of an inning. And I like Boone, and I defend Boone. I think he's good, but I thought that those were two bad decisions. How did you unpack both of those things?
I mean, look, when your ace pitcher, you know, can't get through the fourth inning, Boone's hands are tied, right? I mean, I think Boone gets paid the big bucks for making the decisions. Who comes in the seventh or eighth inning? Does he take somebody in when you're protecting the lead. Yeah, I mean, look, you can make arguments against or for, but BT, you don't win that game, losing game, because, you know, Boone made that mistake. I mean, to me, you lose that game when I always say in October, contact is king. And, you know, the Yankees strike out 21 times versus 7 of the Blue Jays, which means you have 14 times, if you're the Blue Jays, an opportunity for something good to happen. Mm-hmm. And for the Yankees, whose defense has been pretty shaky all year, you have 14 opportunities to screw up. And there's no gimmies in October because there's pressure and anxiety and a routine ground ball. I mean, you've seen more bunts being thrown into right field than anything else. So contact's king, and you also have to value 90 feet. And it's hard when you have a marathon of 6 months, you don't care about 90 feet, and then all of a sudden in October you do, but at that time it's too late. You can't execute.
So then, Alex, why would you think then the Yankees could not only win this series from the beginning but come back? Because the Blue Jays do exactly what you're talking about. The Yankees have not. It's been all or nothing. Then why would you feel encouraged that they could come back?
I feel encouraged because they're a much better team at home. I think Rondon has been much, much better this year. He's had a great year. I think the juice of the fans are going to, you know, get them going. But it's important. I can't emphasize how vital it is for them to score a crooked number in the first two innings, get the crowd going, get the ugly memories from game one and two behind them, and play as bullies. Now, yesterday, if you study yesterday's game, BT and Sal, that was a perfect example, a microcosm of who the Yankees have shown to be for the past 2 or 3 years. You have a top-tier pitcher who dominated them. They couldn't, I mean, went through them like water. They bring in a secondary and tertiary bullpen for the Blue Jays. They destroy them like bullies.
Mm-hmm.
They bring back their setup, and they shut them down again. So in a matter of 9 innings, we saw the evolution of who the Yankees have been. They beat up on bad pitching, and for the most part, they have not been able to manufacture runs against elite pitching.
All right, so Alex, if that's the case, and it is, they struck out 50 times, they've got 10 walks, this has been a problem for years with the Yankees. If that's the case, that's why, and I'm not trying to pull you into a, you know, Barry Cashman conversation here, but that's fundamentally, to me, one of the biggest issues with the Yankees. When you can't handle good pitching, you can't tell me that you built the right way. And this happens every single season.
Well, I mean, Sal, all you have to do is look at the really good moves that Cashman made this year. And they're pretty subtle, right? But McMahon has transformed this team. And McMahon reminds me a lot of what Scott Brosius did when you have guys like, you know, Jimmy Key, David Wells, Andy Pettit. Historically, Yankee pitching, Ron Guidry, it's heavy left-handed pitching, as this roster. And when you have stability there, where you know McMahon's going to be really, really good and very confident defensively, that's been a game changer. You have Rosario and Caballero. Now you give two options to Boone to have out of the bench. It's just common sense. I think sometimes the data and analytics teams, they get so involved and so in the weeds. Man, you just need to have someone give you 6 or 7 innings, give me a bullpen, give me someone that can catch the ball, some good contact, some good timely hitting, hit behind the runners. But you got to get back to playing the game of baseball, teaching the game of baseball, and stop depending on iPads.
Amen, man. So Alex Rodriguez, of course, A-Rod, BT and Sal, and you catch Alex on the Fox, whether it's Fox the National or FS1. They were yesterday, of course, Big Poppy, Jeets, Kevin Burkhardt, who we know and love. So Alex, what is your opinion? I know that baseball is incredibly unpredictable. Like, if you're a star NBA player, you generally flash right away. You know, baseball, the curve is a little different here. It's year three for Volpe. You and I have texted about this. We've talked about Anthony Volpe's development. Like, what kind of player should he be in your eyes based on the skill set, where he is now? What is your take? I know it is, but I want everybody to know what you think about Volpe.
You know, what I think about Volpe, I think Volpe has an ability to be a very good major league shortstop. I would love, and I only say this, guys, because I was privileged enough to have a guy like Larry Boa, Willie Randolph, Luis Soho, guys who were just great teachers, Sam Perlazzo going back to my Seattle days, some unbelievable teachers of the game of baseball. And I'm not sure what's being taught for a kid like Volpe, but I wish he had 2 weeks with the great Larry Boa, and I'm telling you, this kid can be an all-star. And you look at, I don't know if you had a chance to see the late games with Seattle. Polanco hits 2 home runs. And if you look at it from the side, it looks like he's just throwing his hands. It looks like, and BT, we talked about this, just being a good hitter, quieting the body, mm-hmm. stay on top of the baseball, and throw his hands. I mean, it looks like hit and runs. it just, you know, Torrey taught me this, you know, in big moments, think small and big things will happen. And sometimes you see these helicopter swings from Volpe with two strikes. I'm thinking it's Reggie Jackson. He's going down to one knee.
Yeah.
That's not ability. That's whoever's, and I think they have a great coaching staff. I just don't know what's being taught, because what I would do is I would get, you know, all the Derek Jeter films he can have, study it. Just like I studied Cal Ripken, I would study, because great students, great players are great students. And he just has to stay on top of the ball, use his legs, put down strikeouts by 50%. And I think he could be a dynamic player. But what his approach right now is my biggest issue.
I agree with you.
I don't want home runs. I don't want home runs.
I'm sorry. My bad. I agree with you. But I guess the question is, at what point are you too far down the road with an approach that it's almost impossible to change at that level?
I'm telling you, if you met Larry Bowa 2 weeks, he'll change everything. I mean,
wow.
It's just an approach, right? Like, he has an approach that it's almost like he has a lob wedge in his hand. And what I want to do is I want him to stay on top of the ball and think like he's chopping at the ball. Because, look, if they throw you 100 fastballs right down the middle and you swing, you're going to be, if you miss them, you're going to miss 100% underneath them. You're never going to swing over a four-seam fastball. So you almost have to trick yourself and think on top of the baseball, inside, I'm actually going to hit an imaginary baseball that's on top of the baseball, and you're going to make a lot more contact. But you got to swing down through the ball and then finish high. But I think what they're teaching is scoop the ball, like go underneath. And if you're Aaron Judge and you're some of those great ones, Stanton, that's great. But Stanton and Judge are completely different than Volpe, and it looks like they're selling the same book for all players, and it's not a custom-made suit.
Mm. BT and Sal on the Fan. We're talking with Alex Rodriguez, of course, lifelong Met fan like myself. Hey, Rob, what happened to our Mets this year?
Hey, listen, I'm a huge, huge Mets believer. And here's what I would tell you. It's continuity, guys. Like, look, when you're a trader, and I'm not talking about Steve Cohen or anyone, but when you come from data and analytics, you put very little value on the human element. The ability to play, just because you hit 30, 40 home runs in Seattle or Anaheim or here, doesn't mean you're going to come to the box of New York where you guys have all you guys. You have really, really smart fans, passionate. Not every – those pinstripes are heavy. And that doesn't mean you're going to be able to perform there and at the highest level. So, I don't know. I just that's a tricky one.
Well, I got one for you here. So, you weren't too far away from owning the Mets. Let's say if you would have won that – and you did own the Mets, how would you treat Pete Alonso's free agency? Because we know what he is with the defense, which isn't great, not an athlete, right-handed stuff, but an amazing power hitter. How would you value him?
Well, to me, Sal, you can't make decisions based on, you know, what do you want to do for this year? I think you have to look at windows, right? What's our 3-year window? What's our 5-year window? And if Alonso fits in that window, then you sign him. But you have to start building some continuity. And the only way you get the big ROI is think about you guys. You guys are great. And you're better this year than you were 3 years ago. And you're going to be a lot better in 3 years than you are today. It's just a matter of getting better. It's like brothers and sisters, right? Like, you can finish each other's sentences. Well, my God, don't you think that helped me to play 15 years next to Derek Jeter? Mm-hmm. I knew everything that he wanted to do and back and forth. Could you find a better third baseman? Sure. Could you find a better shortstop? I don't think so, but together we were pretty darn dynamic.
Oh, stop, dude! Stop being so humble. You should stop being so humble.
No, you know what I mean.
Come on, I know what you mean. You were the better shortstop. Stop. Come on.
No, but playing together helps, and I think
I got you.
You know, are you going to do a big transformation and change the roster over again?
Yeah.
And that's going to take another 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
By the way, I think we're learning why, BT, you got invited to the launch.
Yeah.
A-Rod clearly thought he was asking me to go.
Right? First time I ignored it, second time, it's BT, it's not Sal. Come on, A-Rod.
No, it's all right. We both sound alike. We get that. A-Rod, how about your, this is Sal here, Yankee legacy. Are you happy with where you, I noticed you weren't at Old Timers Day. I'd like to know why, but are you happy with your New York Yankee legacy?
Oh, man, Sal, I couldn't be happier, honestly. Like, with all the stuff that I put myself through and some of the pain that cost myself and my family, I've learned so much. I'm in such a good place. I love the New York Yankees. They treated me fantastic, and I was invited to Old Timers Day a couple of years ago. It was an honor. I sprinted there, and anytime they invite me back, I'm always here to help. But I'm very happy with my situation.
How much you miss the game, man? I mean, you talk about like rats, gym rats. You were a baseball rat, you cage rat, you ground ball rat, just a baseball rat. How about you have to miss the game tremendously?
Well, I miss being around young players. I miss teaching. I try to learn every day, even to this day. I watch every single game, try to watch every pitch, if not, I record it. I watch you guys when you're talking about baseball because I love it so much.
He does.
Been my first love, and it always has been, and it always will be. But I get my fix with Fox. I think we have an incredible group with Poppy and Jeter and Kevin Burkhardt trying to teach America what we saw through our eyes and make it digestible and fun. And if you guys saw us last night, we were up to like 12 or 1 in the morning, and the wheels were coming off, and we were having a lot of fun.
But that's what you got to do. Like Charles and Kenny and Shaq, when the wheels come off, that's what's great. And that's where I think you talk about whether it's me and Sal doing a show together or continuity with the lineup. Like, the more you can finish a thought and know where the other person's going and know that, like, that trust is obviously there, then you could just be loose, and those are the best broadcasts, man.
Hey, take it's not continuity just in sports. I mean, I was just saying how much he's improved on TV, how much Poppy's improved. I think all of us collectively, we've improved, and we have more confidence, more continuity. We go back and forth a lot more. And yeah, can you replace me? Can you replace Poppy? Sure, but are we going to be better as a whole?
Yeah.
And again, teams is what wins, and not just individuals, you know, figureheads.
So Alex mentioned before about the Mets. Now, you don't own the Mets, but you got a nice chunk of the T-Wolves. So we're all Knick guys in this city here. Be honest, Cat have the heart to lead this team into June? Are we going to win a championship with Cat? You know him well.
I think Cat is a unique, incredible player. Yes, I think he has the heart, the courage. He has everything that it takes to be a championship player, and you guys have a good one there. I was hoping last year, fellas, for a Timberwolves Knicks final. That would have been unbelievable. I would have came to your show and hosted with you guys for a day.
Oh man,
we would have sat in the owner's box with you. There you go.
That would have been sick.
Dude, can Absolutely. We come anyway? We probably could.
Well, you guys can sit with me anyway. You don't need to be in the championship. You guys are my buddies.
That's awesome, man.
Oh, look at A-Rod now. A-Rod, I'm going to take you up on this. One last thing for me before we let you go. You claim to be an 86 Met. You reference Hernandez and Carter and Straw. Have you seen 1986, A Year to Remember, the VHS tape? Have you ever seen that?
Sal, you didn't just ask me that. Right?
Put him in his place.
Cowboys, Hotfoot.
Hotfoot.
I'm just making sure.
Like five times I've watched that.
Just wanted to
confirm. I loved it.
There you go. Just wanted to make sure, because that confirms to me, at least, not that you needed to get my approval, but in this case you did. That confirms that you are an 86 Met fan. And A-Rod, I will say this. When I come over to that beautiful place you have there in L.A., I'm bringing the VHS, and we will watch that 1986 You Remember together. Because I know we are Mets fans together.
It.
Me and Alex Rodriguez, huge Mets fans, BT.
Have fun. Hey, you passed the test, Alex. Don't you feel good? You feel good? You passed Sal's test. Oh, man.
What?
You passed the test. You wanted to see if you were a real Mets guy. Well,
Thank you. Definitely.
30 minutes. Very generous with your time. I know you're in transit right now. Tell Nick I appreciate him. Tell him I appreciate him for putting everything together. And keep doing your thing with Poppy and Derek, and the analysis is top flight. And listen, I will say this too. You're making fun of Sal looking at your Instagram. Alex puts out a lot of baseball content for young baseball players, which I love. And there's a lot of parents out there, softball players, baseball. Check it out. You know nobody loves the game more than Alex Rodriguez. So really good stuff, man. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys, and keep up the great work. And hey, maybe the Yankees get a little luck here, and we can do this again in late fall. That'd be awesome.
Oh, let's go, baby. Nice.
Now you know what? A-Rod, thank you. Now we root for the Yankees, because I love to get A-Rod in studio.
He'll come in, too. He would come in.
That was fun, man. You know, he was one of my favorite. Remember, too, as a kid for me, I remember being at the Rich Martin baseball camp, which they used to have at Hofstra.
Okay. I remember. I
you and I might
Rich
have talked
Martin.
About this.
Now, I played against Rich Martin.
Okay, I didn't play. You know, he was a manager
like that,
at Hofstra at that point.
Sure.
And he would host a camp.
He was good.
I would go with my buddy Nick Whalen, and we went a couple years in a row to the summer camp. It was great.
Yeah, it was good. He was a good coach.
Now, at that time, I was probably 15 years old, whatever it may be. But A-Rod, dude, was coming up. I think he was 18 when he first came up with Seattle.
Okay.
And he was like, my God.
He was good.
Like, I loved A-Rod before even really knowing anything about him. His power to right center as a right-handed hitter.
Speed, rocket at short. I mean, that's when he was really, you know, lanky still, hadn't really, you know, developed. He was a kid, 18, 19. And the thing about Alex, I don't know if there's. Now, the thing that you have to appreciate about Alex at this point is that he owns his mistakes. Like, he complicated his world. Yeah. Like, he made it more tougher than it needed to be. But nobody loves baseball like that guy. And I don't think very many people know baseball like Alex. That was good stuff right there.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Out on the Fan. Apparently, ticket prices are coming down.
Are the Yankees keeping the Blue Jay fans out like they did the Red Sox fans, which a lot of these teams do nowadays? You see that?
I don't know. I did see that, yeah, with the Yankees. I have no problem with that, by the way. Me neither. So I don't know what's going on with that. I do know that, at least I saw an article in the Post saying that ticket prices for Game 3 have come down, which you can understand. I mean, down 0-2, mm-hmm. not the same type feel of going to the game as it would be 1-1 or obviously up 2-0. But I still think, come on, man. It's you lost the first two up there. It's a series. Go win your next two here and get it to a game five.
So I texted you, I think it was Saturday morning. I saw you on Sports Night Friday night, right? Yeah. And obviously, I remember what you told us on our show here. So, mm-hmm. But I saw you doubled down. You felt really good about the Yankees going into the series. So I'm curious, and I've been here before as well, like where you have such a strong opinion going yeah. in. But then you're provided evidence so much to the contrary, but because you felt one way so strongly before anything happened that it's hard to deviate from that. I'm not saying that. That's what I'm asking. Like, you really still think the Yankees are equipped to come back and do this and win three games, including game five up there?
That to me is the talk. Remember, I thought the Yankees were going to win in three or four. Yeah. I did not expect to see what we saw. Now, I also didn't expect Toronto could pitch like that. So I was basing my strong opinion on the Yankees' bats doing the bulk of the damage against the Blue Jays. I expected the Blue Jays to score some runs. Mm-hmm. I expected the Yankees to score more. I still believe that they will score a bunch of runs these next two games at home. Even with Bieber on the mound, I expect the Yankees to get to him, and I expect them to get to the bullpen game in game four. And then from there, maybe the pressure's back on Toronto about choking it away. However, I would not want to see you savage in an elimination game in that ballpark. So that's the part of me where maybe has changed a little bit, but I still at my core, like the Yankees are going to be an impossible out. Even in that game yesterday, it was a giveaway game.
Yeah.
They put a little bit of fear in Blue Jays fans showing that they could come back like that. Oh, you get some guys on, boom, a home run. Like that's how they're built. So I still do believe that the Yankees are going to make this a legitimate series winning the next two.
I love it. I hope that you're right. And, you know, and as much as I was getting frustrated watching the game, I'm like, look at all these runs that mean nothing. You know, but once I stepped away from, like, the disappointment and the I think, the sheer stunned nature of watching these first two games, the score, there is something to be said for, you know, as a team, getting a little mojo, even though they were never going to win the game with a comeback. And just step into the batter's box with a different mentality tomorrow night. Number one, you're at home, but also because most of the guys, you know, knocked the ball around a little bit when the game was completely out of reach. And some of the, you know, I don't know if that's immediately transferable to tomorrow night, but I'll tell you this, you got to have a better chance to hit tomorrow than if you would have lost 13-0.
Yeah, 13-7 is a lot better than 13-2 or whatever it would have been. So not that you're taking moral victories, you're certainly not, but just at least saying like, hey, you may have gotten the better of us in these first two games. We're still here. And I do think a lot of the circumstance with Toronto exploding, you're not going to see Will Warren. You're not going to see Luke Weaver in a key spot. You're going to see the best the Yankees' arms have. Hey, it could come down to Rodon.
Yeah.
Is Rodon, like, if Rodon gets lit up, all bets are off. I didn't think Max Fried was going to get beat up,
mm-hmm.
and he did. If Rodon can only give you five innings and Toronto gets to him, then...
I think Rodon's going to be good tomorrow night. I trust him not to spin an absolute masterpiece like Schlittler or... Not that Fried was a masterpiece in game one against the Red Sox. That was more Crochet, but I'm not even expecting that. I'm expecting him to give the Yankees a chance to win. I'd be surprised if that doesn't happen.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Much more about the Yankees with A-Rod coming up at 1 o'clock. Back to the Giants calls. Nick is calling from Huntington. What's up, Nick?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Okay, Nick.
Sal, I know what you're saying. I want sustainability, too, but you want to sustain this? I mean, like, Dable's not going to get fired. I mean, unless the Giants don't do that, unless your name is McAdoofus. but his Dable's teams are consistently unprepared, consistently commit too many penalties and mistakes, and they either get embarrassed or they do just enough to lose. I mean, you can book it next year. They're going to lose week one in embarrassing fashion. They're going to have a game against the Cowboys that's right there for the taking that they're going to lose in heartbreak. They don't beat the Eagles. They don't beat the Cowboys. They don't beat the Commanders. I mean, Dane has actually added talent to this team. He's made some questionable moves. I mean, Darius Slayton, I hope you're listening, Darius. You blow. You have two jobs.
Jeez, Nick.
Everybody's pissed off today,
boy. You have two jobs, Darius. Catch the ball and hold on to it. And you suck at both.
Okay? Yeah, I'm not going to disagree there. I think it was a little harsh. Nick, what I would say real quick, and we do appreciate your passion, why do you think is the main reason that they lost yesterday? Because you went over Dable and said that hey, he does just enough to lose since he's been here, all that stuff. Why do you think they lost yesterday?
The turnovers.
Okay, and that's not on him is what I'm saying, and thank you for the call. That's on the rookies. And you're right. They haven't beaten the Cowboys, haven't beaten the Eagles, haven't beaten the Commanders, also haven't had a quarterback to do so. Now, forget what Daniel Jones has done elsewhere. He wasn't getting it done here. I actually, not that I'm going to pick the Giants to win, I don't know yet, but I don't think that this is an impossible, you know, lamb to the slaughter feel Thursday night. The Eagles just got beat by the Broncos, and the Broncos are very good, well-coached, very good team, talented all over the place. Giants are nowhere near that level. However, the Eagles have not been playing great football all year long.
No.
And with Jackson Dart, man, again, it looks different if he doesn't turn the ball over, and that's a huge if, but that's what happens with a rookie. To me, with Jackson Dart, we're in the game. You've got a shot. With Jackson Dart now. That's all you could ask for. They could run the football much better. Scataboo is a beast. I bet that he's not going to make those mistakes again. He's a beast. You could run the football with him. The RPO with Dart, that's a weapon that the Giants haven't had. Obviously, without Neighbors, that's a problem. You don't have another receiver. You got Bo Collins there not finishing the route. That led to another. Like that's not on Dable either. All I'm saying is the Dable-Dart combination, we don't know anything about. We don't know about it. We haven't seen it but two games. That's all that I'm saying.
Well, I mean, listen, you want to tell me there's also a little division with Philly? I mean, A.J. Brown talking about that go route where Jalen Hurts overshot him. He threw his quarterback under the bus. I mean, he straight up said, he's like, yeah, not, you know, basically not a good throw. I mean, I don't know what's going on with those two. It's the amount of targets. It's ridiculous here. But I just don't feel like the Giants... And I'm going to just keep it to the next game here. I don't think the Giants against a good team, and the Eagles are still really good, going to come out and look as sharp as they've looked the last two times against the Chargers and the Saints. Now, the Chargers are good, but Jim Harbaugh's close to firing his defensive coordinator. Like, that defense is not really, really locked in here. So if the Giants come out and the first couple of the drives have put points up and look sharp against Philly, I'd be a little surprised. Actually, I'd be very surprised. And without Neighbors with that, you know, potential home run, that big play, that big third down and 12 bailout, I just don't know how they're going to win a lot of games.
Fair enough. I'm just saying that the last two games, I can feel a significant difference from where we were prior.
I can do. I would be dishonest if I didn't. I can feel that too.
So we all know Dable's record. Like, nobody's going to dispute that. I can't dispute that. All I'm saying is that we are in the infancy stages of evaluating a head coach and his new young quarterback. And I wouldn't just go nuts based off of one result yesterday, even though many of you expected the Giants to win that game. Justin is in Manhattan. What's up, Justin?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to talk about the Jets real quick. I know it's tempting not to care about them. But, you know, when you hire a new coach like that, and we've gone through so many coaches, and it feels like as a Jet fan, we're just hearing the same thing over and over again about changing the culture and accountability And my question is, when are the Jets going to realize someone that talks about accountability and bringing accountability doesn't actually bring accountability? Like, bringing accountability means setting a set of standards that you hold your organization to, from the players to the coaches to the personnel department. And, like, when was the last time you heard, like, someone like Sean McVay talk about accountability, or Dan Campbell talk about accountability? Like, they just set the standards. They just do it.
Well, hold on, Just. Hang on one second.
I don't want to give...
Yeah, hold on. The only thing about Dan Campbell, I didn't really watch his press conferences when he was... in his first year with Detroit, I think he started 0-11. I'm sure he dropped some of that stuff, like, hey, it's going to take a long time, and we've got to get men who are accountable. Otherwise, they're not going to be here. I would say that was probably part of his approach then, just to be fair.
That's true, and that's why I'm not ready to give up on Glenn yet. But I think for the Jets to really turn the corner, there needs to be a real internalization. Because, like, there, you look at that defense, like, they're not playing with speed. They haven't created a turnover. They're not playing with the physicality that's needed in the NFL.
Nope.
And, like, that's his unit. And, you know, we need to see some of that accountability on the field at some point. I know it's only been 5 games, but...
Well, they've, like, cut people.
The standard and, like, let's go.
They've cut people. He's pulled people. What do you want him to do? You want him to fight somebody on the bench? I mean, what is there to do now?
No, but the idea that he can be chewed up and spit out by the media and fans and in just a few weeks, to me, is a, like, that's a real thing. The same person, the person that we saw stand up before us before he ever coached the game with the Jets, is different than the person that we've seen after 5 weeks. And there's a reason for that, because it's not just about the losing. It's about all that comes with it. The fact that he had already addressed it's not the same old Jets. And what was the punchback? Yeah, we are the same old Jets. We suck, blah, 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 blah. Now he's like, what the hell have I got myself into? Like, what is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
My team's not doing anything that I'm coaching them to do. So I've got to figure that out. The media and fans are already coming for me. They're not giving me a chance to even breathe here a few weeks in. Like, that's a lot to overcome. I'm not making excuses for him. He's got to figure it out, but... This is an overhaul of epic proportions that takes time. So for those of you who call or say you're done with Aaron Glenn, like, what did you expect? Did you think the Jets were going to be good? They suck. Their quarterback sucks. Their defense sucks. They've sucked for a long time. What did you expect? And it's all on the coach. Now, I'm not saying it's been pretty, BT, because it has been ugly more often than not. However, there are some things that you can see. Like, offensively, they can move the football.
Yeah, they run the ball. Run the ball.
They ran the football down Miami's throat on an opening drive to a point where I can't remember a Jets team I've seen drive the football like that. The idiot fumbles it on the... I shouldn't call him an idiot, but you know what I mean.
Brandon,
like,
Allen.
He fumbles it. I mean, come on, dude. Fumble it on the goal line.
It was a great drive.
And the whole game is ruined because he fumbled it on the goal line. One thing Aaron Glenn's talked about, we can't beat ourselves. All they do is beat themselves. Is that the head coach's fault? I don't know. Can't cut everybody. Like, what are you supposed to do?
Well, the one thing you said that, you know, okay, so with the same old Jet stuff, he didn't have to address that. He chose to address that. He willingly and proactively and almost preemptively addressed that. Like, if he was asked about it yesterday, like, you know, hey, Aaron, you know, you were here for Kotite. What do you say to Jet fans who feel like it's the same old Jets? And he said what he said a month and a half ago. Well, then that would make more sense. But he started his press conference, and trust me, I took the bait. I was fired up, and I'm not quitting on AG. I'm just quitting on Woody. He's the worst. I'm gonna stick by AG for a little bit. But what Aaron Glenn said, hey, on his press conference, introductory press conference, we're the New York Jets, and we're built for this bleep. That's what he said. And I'm like, all right, here we go. And then shortly thereafter, he, with no prodding, no provocation, he went into, we're not the same old Jets. That was his fault.
I would start with the Yankees as they step into a hornet's nest up in Toronto. And it just goes to serve, like, I feel bad for Aaron Judge. I love Aaron Judge. I admire him as a player. I think he's everything that the Yankees want to be as a player. And he had his moment. He had his moment. And
he had his opportunity, and he failed to have his
moment. Well, I mean, but the moment came, and you know, you hear John Smoltz talking continually since the game starts to the game ends.
He's still talking.
He's still talking
right now.
He's the opposite of David Cone, by the way.
Yeah.
But he was talking about this. This is the chance where now you have to actually pitch to Aaron Judge on Saturday. You have to throw him something because the bases are loaded. And of course, Gausman, you know, gave him a cookie and he missed it. And then he throws him a slider. And if I watch him and Giancarlo Stanton swing at that pitch one more time, I think my head is going to explode. And that was that moment for him. And he needed that moment. And if he would have taken the walk, that would have been great. That would have been fine. I mean, you know, Cody Bellinger wanted to get up there, and he wants to get a hit. And what does he do? He works out a walk. And if you think about it, Gausman at that time, I think, had thrown 7 or 8 balls, pitches, out of the strike zone. And even Ben Rice is, stop swinging. Just like, stop with the offensive line. Stop swinging at the freaking splitter that's coming in around your ankles.
Yeah.
And poor Ben Rice, you know, he was overmatched at that point as well, too. But I would just say that, you know, those are the times and the moments where your reputation is made, where your clutch gene is shown. And unfortunately, for Aaron Judge, who's actually gotten on base a number of times in the offseason, I mean, the playoffs here, that was a turning point in this series without question. Because if the Yankees go on to explode that inning, who knows what this is going to look like. And the fact that they would actually have a chance to win a game in which Luis Gil had started, it would have been amazing. And the only other thing I'm going to say about the Yankees, and the Yankee fan can have at it this morning if they want, because they deserve their ability to talk this thing out, is you cannot, I don't care what Aaron Boone says, you cannot put Luke Weaver out there again in a high-leverage situation, no matter what you think the analytics say. Or let's be human here now.
Human.
Let's take a look at the human being.
Yeah.
The human being after the game the other night couldn't even get through a sentence to talk to you about how he feels and something's off. So I don't care what the analytics say from last year. I don't care what they say from the beginning of this year when he got it kind of right and then it kind of blew up on him again. You can't. And if you do, and you do it in Yankee Stadium, there is going to be so much stress and so much pressure and so much agita in that stadium that guy is not going to be able to come through for you.
Yeah, I mean, let's just hope that there's a situation where maybe they have a lead and that decision has to be made, because this has been a bloodbath from the beginning. I mean, and then you're thinking, okay, game one, it's game one. They're waiting for you. They're ready to go. You had your opportunities. The offense doesn't come through. We're throwing Max Fried out there. Max Fried was amazing in the wild card series. He was amazing in the second half. You sign this guy, and he is supposed to be the dude who stops the bleeding in a situation like this on the road to send this series back 1-1, and he is awful. Absolutely awful. So now your entire season is the offense going to wake up when it never does in the playoffs? Or is Carlos Rodon, who is one of the guys you still don't trust in a big situation, going to go out there and pitch a gem and shut down this lineup that has just battered Yankee pitching for the first 2 days? It is a bad situation. And all that the good momentum and the good feeling around this team that was built up, and I mean, has been not just been stopped in the tracks. I mean, they are retreating. I mean, this was a barrage.
Yeah, but
from a team that never gets it done, by the way.
I know that, but you know, thinking about the bottom of the first inning and Vlad Guerrero just absolutely going yard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, okay, we're locked in and we've been waiting for this and we're ambushing this team.
Yeah, it does feel like they're getting, it's a get over the hump spot for them. That's what it feels like.
It really does. And it's almost like they've been talking about it. They've been waiting for it. And, you know, this will be interesting to watch tomorrow night to see how the Yankees come out and see whether or not, because it's always about your next day's pitcher, let's face it. And one of the advantages that you have when you do win the division and you get the bye is that you get the pitching matchup in game one, that you hope that pitching matchup is going to lead you to a victory. And for the most part, I mean, Luis Gil gave up 2 home runs. He hasn't really pitched. I mean, they were individual home runs, okay? Not a big deal. You could overcome that. I mean, especially with this lineup that's supposed to be
right. Well, that's the point.
Six to eight runs a game.
You need Luis Gil to go eight innings of shutout baseball. You needed him to keep him in the game and have the offense show up and match what Toronto was doing. And they couldn't. And they had their opportunities. And it's that same look that you're talking about that is so frustrating to Yankee fans. It's these swings and misses at balls outside of the strike zone that we've been watching them flail at for postseason after postseason after postseason, whether it's been the Red Sox or the Rays or the Astros a million times, and now it's the Toronto Blue Jays.
The only thing I will say is that last week, after they lose the game one to the Red Sox, you know, there was that whole thing going around. Since they went to this format, no team has ever come back from losing game one.
Yeah.
I said, well, you got an opportunity. Do something fantastic. Win two elimination games. And they did. I would say the same thing now. You just got embarrassed, you got obliterated, and you just got your asses handed to you. Now come back and do the same thing to them in your building, and then get it to a game five, and then, you know, the chips fall where they may at that point.
Yeah.
But don't go out with a whimper. This is the thing. Don't go out with a whimper. The only thing I will say is that it just seems like, especially the right-handed hitters for the Toronto Blue Jays, are locked in. They are locked in. They've been waiting. They've been sitting. They just couldn't wait to get to these games. And it really does reflect in the hitting. It reflects in the fielding, especially in game one. Everything has gone the right way for the Blue Jays, except when they pulled out Yasevich.
Yeah.
Because
Yasevich.
Because they pulled him out after 78 pitches gone. We're up 12-0. We don't need him now. Right. We may need him in game four.
Yasevich in the box.
I'll tell you, that day he had his Schlittler moment, didn't he?
Oh, my God. Here's one thing that remains, is that the Blue Jays haven't gotten it done yet. Yes, they beat them up bad two games in their building, but this is a team who has not gotten over the hump. They haven't won a series like this. You know, they get the bye and win the division, which is something that they haven't done either, but they still have to win that elimination game, and that's the hardest one to do. So going into Yankee Stadium with their backs against the wall, that's still going to be tough. Now, if they go out with the confidence that they had in games one and two and just dispose of the Yankees as if they weren't there, then, I mean, we're having a conversation, the same conversation we would have had if they lost the Red Sox series, frankly.
I have to say, and I know you probably didn't see it, we were talking a little bit earlier this morning before we got on the air. The last at bat by Stanton last night.
Yeah, I was done at 12-0.
Yeah, I know. But they fought back. To their credit, they fought back. And obviously, when you get into the secondary pitchers of the Toronto Blue Jays, they're going to start to hit and things like that.
Well, they're throwing all the balls over the plate at this point. Let's get this over with.
Exactly. You know? But the final at bat, there's two guys on. You know, maybe he hits a home run and he makes it 12-10. Who knows? Or whatever it was. Whatever.
13-10.
Yeah. Who knows? But he misses one right down the middle, and then two sliders completely out of the strike zone. Like, he's guessing that, oh, guess what? They're going to throw me another fastball down the middle. No, they're not. They know exactly who you are and what you do. And I know he's had his moments, and he's had his great moments for the Yankees in the playoffs. But that at-bat at the end of the game yesterday just kind of summed it up, the two games, at what they meant and what it looked like. And it was just like a give up at bat, and I have no chance to get a hit here, and I'm not even trying to get a hit here.
Yeah, I mean, this is another situation, because if they're not eliminated, they could still come back. I would not be shocked if they came back and won this series. But I wouldn't be shocked. Of course not. I mean, it's the Toronto Blue Jays here. If we were talking about, you know, the Astros in their prime, in their dynasty, I would say, yeah, this is impossible for them to come back. It's the Toronto Blue Jays.
These guys are locked in.
I understand. I can't be shocked by anything in sports, for God's sakes. The crap we've watched. I mean, Mark Sanchez is in jail right now for stabbing it or whatever, beating up a box truck driver. Nothing surprises me anymore. I have no idea. But if they do get eliminated by the Blue Jays, and it's with a whimper, I mean, what are the Yankees? They're a great team. They always make the playoffs. They're always right there. But then they always get beat by a better team. They're never the best team that's failing. They're just not good enough. And it's every year it's somebody else. You know, and it was the Astros for many years, the Red Sox for many years. Now this is going to be the fourth. It was the Rays. Now it's going to be the fourth team that you felt like, if you want to count the Dodgers in the World Series, the fifth team that's just like, whap, 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 get out of here. And three of them in their own division. So, I mean, I just, you can't, like, break up the core because you need to have these guys to have a good team. But there's just, there's something missing because there's always another team out there that feels like they're significantly better than the Yankees.
Well, if your number one pitcher is going to have an outing like he did yesterday, you're screwed. You're basically screwed.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a chance with Luis Gil because it was 2-0. It was 2-1. Bases loaded. No out. Aaron Judge at the plate. That's the moment. That is it. That's the game-changing situation where they get out of it. No more runs scored. And at the very least, the game should have been tied. At the very least. And instead of the game being tied, it's basically one run and three outs. Boom, done. And they got Gossman out of the they got him off the mound, and he was pitching great. And according to John Smoltz, it was one of the greatest outings he had ever seen. I'm like, what?
He's turning into like what Gruden was when Gruden was doing Monday Night Football, where everybody was the best player who ever played the game. You know, and I love Gruden, but I mean, every week
it we was love like, Gruden, and I love John Smoltz. I've interviewed him. I love him. He knows more baseball than I'll ever imagine. But
a lot of platitudes. Too many platitudes.
There's a lot. There's a lot. Yes,
but which is fine. I mean, it's also we're watching these games and getting frustrated by the performances, and that's when you turn your ire towards the broadcast. Sometimes, like if things are going well, I don't pay attention to a broadcast. When things are going poorly for whatever team that I would like to win, then I start focusing on the broadcast and start losing my mind. But hey, you know, you got a day off today, obviously Tuesday with Rodon, and then you get, you know, get it to Schlittler at this point. That's what we're trying to do, right? Get it to Schlittler.
Yes.
You get it to Schlittler, and then you might have a chance for the game five, and then you got the Blue Jays on their heels. But you know, this is your classic one pitch, one inning situation, because they got to win this game. Then you put Schlittler back out there with the confidence that he has. Although, I mean, I personally love it. I love the social media stuff, and he kept going after the game, so it wasn't just like a champagne thing. He woke up the next day and was still hammering people. But you come out in a game four, if it gets there, and they smack around Schlitty,
yes,
then that is a bad look.
It's amazing. We had Lucy Burge on Friday. Next thing you know, that thing is blown up all over the place.
TMZ had it.
Everybody had it all of a sudden. And good for her, because she understands how to create content.
Oh, yeah.
She also had to create attention for herself. And Cam bought into it. So now if we get to a game four, and they better get to a game four, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what the stadium. I think the stadium tomorrow night is going to try to rival what they saw up in Toronto, because the Toronto fans were unbelievable.
Yeah, like I'll
you got to give the fans something to cheer for.
I'll give you an example. So when I went to Game 5 of the NLCS last year, the Mets were down 3-1, and you felt like it was just, you know, it was a matter of time that they were going to lose. But the fans still were like, listen, we're home, we got a chance, and let's just go for it. Let's be positive, let's get into it. And, of course, they win that game. They win that game big. So I would, as frustrated as a Yankee fan is, before there's a pitch thrown, they're going to be fired up. They're going to be into it. But the second they get down, if they get down, bang. They're going to be done. They're going to be right out of it.
All I can say is that you got to hope that the Yankees start their game the way that game one started for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Meaning that one of these guys has got to go yard. One of these guys has got to get the fans into it. And then hopefully Carlos Rodon will give you a gem. You know, this is, again, when you think about advantages and disadvantages, you know, there's no Bassett, there's no Scherzer. You know, what do they do after Gossman? What do they do after this Yesavage kid?
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, now what?
Well.
To Shane Bieber.
Right, you have Bieber pitching, but it's like, it's funny, we say, now what? I mean, they threw the rookie out there. The guy was unbelievable. So, I mean, does it matter? When the Yankee offense is in the tank like this, does it matter who they're throwing up against? I mean, they've never really hit Gossman, you know, traditionally over the years. He's been tough for the Yankees. But, you know, I silly me, thought that the Yankees would feast against a young pitcher, but that's not what happens these days. These rookies come out. The Yankees have one. The Mets had one in the regular season, and the Blue Jays had one yesterday.
Hell, the Red Sox have one.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah, Connelly early in that game until he was.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
We were just talking about this during the break, BT, where Bieber is going to go for the Blue Jays in Game 3. That's a one guy. Like, I got to give Schneider credit. I didn't think the Blue Jays were legit. I wasn't worried about them coming into the series. I've been proven wrong so far already in the two games. They've managed it well as well to have Yesavage pitch in Toronto and get that crowd behind him. It's a different animal. You have him pitch in Yankee Stadium, no doubt about it. And then having the veteran Bieber lined up to pitch Game 3 in the Bronx.
Well, these are the advantages that you have when you actually win the division. You get to dictate some things, and you know that's been an asset. But you know, Toronto just—I mean, I don't know that anybody fears the Yankees anymore. I think those days are fairly over, long gone. But I like Toronto. It doesn't even seem like Toronto respects them. They are very comfortable against the Yankees.
They're playing downhill. They're playing loose. They're having fun. They get just a bunch of gamers up and down that lineup. I am shocked, though, to this extent. And I will be even more shocked if the Yankees don't get off the mat here tomorrow night. And, like, the bats got to get going. That's where the Yankees become bullies, when they start to mash. Mm-hmm. Without that, then they're in trouble. You play behind the eight ball, you're down 4-0 and 5-0 before you can blank. It's like, uh-oh, well, what are we going to do now? So I didn't think that Toronto – I knew Toronto had a better offense than the Red Sox. I did not think that their pitching was – like, Gausman, dude, he mowed the Yankees down. And then the bullpen as well. And Yesavage, I never even heard of before he goes in there. This guy looks like – he looked better than Schlittler did the other night. So, I mean, it's remarkable, the pitching that they've had so far. Bieber, obviously, we're familiar with. But even at this point in his career, is he still what he once was? No. I think the Yankees bats, they have to carry them at least a game, and clearly they need to carry him to Game 5.
All right, let me ask you this. Yeah. So what if they don't? All right, so one of the things, and not everybody said this, but I certainly felt it, like it would have been absolutely, utterly unacceptable for the Yankees to lose to the Red Sox there. Right. Unacceptable. If they lose tomorrow night and they just go down with a whimper, how is that even different?
I think it might actually be worse, because now you got to see, you had hope, a team that has punked you all. Like, what is going on here?
A longer series to establish yourself, less randomness.
Right. Like, if they lost to the Red Sox, a part of that could have been like, hey, that's the crapshoot of a wild card round. You're getting punked by the team that owned you all year in the regular season. If they lose tomorrow, man,
there's going to be some tough discussions, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's very different from losing to the Red Sox. You know, maybe worse, because there's more time, as I said, to establish yourself, whatever. And the Yankees' pitching matchups have been so in their advantage, at least. You know, I mean, Gausman's good. He's actually handled the Yankees fairly well. And, you know, Heel is not the same post-injury. He just doesn't have great command. But, you know, pitching advantage yesterday, pitching advantage tomorrow, pitching advantage game four, if there is one. And even on paper, you would say pitching advantage game five up in Toronto with Fried, but he's been spooked up there and they've rocked him. So I don't know.
I feel like if they got swept, it's like more like Sidney Sweeney maybe standing you up as opposed to going on a
future. You saw that. Yes, interesting pop culture reference there for Mike, right? I saw that. Yeah.
Ooh, BT and Sal, the fan. Let's get back to the phones here. 888-808-1019, the number to call. John is calling from Danbury, Connecticut. What's up, John?
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking a call. I know I call about the Giants, but I'd love to get a comment in about the Yankees, too. I think, you know, I think yesterday with the Giants, it was a lot of the rookies' fault. I really liked what the offense was doing in the beginning, and actually moving the ball was actually a pleasant sight to see. But in my opinion, Shane Bowen is not the guy. I really hope that with the new talent that we have on the defensive line, that it is going to attract some better defensive coordinators to actually run some, you know, more consistent schemes against teams that are really not good. I mean, I felt like the defensive line really just was invisible yesterday. And as for the Yankees, I mean, I've never been more frustrated watching this team than I am now. And I think looking back on it, toward the end of the season, it was all smoke and mirrors. We were playing crappy teams, the bottom of the barrel. Yeah, built our confidence up, and we made this great run to, you know, tie the division and, you know, the tiebreaker and all this and that. But, it, like, this team is just not it, man. Like, you know, the bottom of the order has been abysmal. Volpe's been, you know, a little bit better.
Not yesterday.
I can't stand Jazz Chisholm's at bat. I can't stand looking at Wells. The freaking breaking ball, these sliders, you knew it was coming. I'm yelling at the TV, here comes the breaking ball in the dirt. Swing the bat.
But what about Judge?
Three, sit him down.
You mentioned a bottom of the order. Okay, well, I'm just saying.
Judge is just checking boxes at this point. He's hitting singles, and he's not doing the damage that he needs to.
I think
we're
the
relying
worst has been
on
Grisham.
Him to be the guy.
Grisham.
And I mean, Grisham has been,
terrible.
I mean, it's been up and down. It is. And you look at this order, you know, you look at how, you know, the Red Sox and Toronto is structured. Yeah. They have guys that are actually batting above 250 and are actually getting the ball in play. And you can kind of see the strategy that the Yankees were taking early on with these pitchers where, hey, fastball comes, you got to take it early on. And unfortunately, you know, we just weren't getting the ball in play. Right, but the minute you foul off that foul ball, you're screwed. Like, we're done. And that breaking ball comes and you're cooked.
But that's how they're built, John. And good stuff. Thank you for the call. That's the problem with the Yankees far too often. They are a bully offense that mash you to death in the regular season, and then when they face good pitching, they look like they've looked in the postseason so far. And it's like Grisham, nobody expects Grisham to be that good, but everybody was taking bows. Hey, Grisham, 30-plus home runs, what an incredible year he's had. Well, if you're hitting .150 in the postseason, not having your impact felt in front of Aaron Judge, then that's not any good. And even the guys behind him, whether it's Giancarlo Stanton, Jazz Chisholm, it's all the same thing. The Yankees offense. Like, if I asked you, BT, going into the postseason, what the biggest concern would be with the Yankees, your answer would be what?
Oh, God, the biggest concern with probably bullpen.
Right. Me too. Right. Has the bullpen been the primary culprit of why the Yankees have find themselves now in an 0-2 hole? To me, it is not like it's Max Fried, it's the starting pitching, and it's the offense. That's supposed to be their bread and butter. Max Fried's their $218 million ace. He put him in a hole yesterday. You can't do that. Unacceptable performance. And the offense is the Yankees' bread and butter. That's their strength. Like, their bullpen, even with Bednar and Williams, their bullpen's a weakness. That has not been the major culprit here. Obviously, it let the game get out of control, but that's not the reason why they've lost to me in this postseason.
I think it's been a little bit of everything, which is what really worries me. You know, you mentioned Grisham sitting .158 with, Stanton's hitting .150, Jazz hitting .188, and the bullpen has not, like, been this colossal nightly implosion here, but game one against the Red Sox, it was with Luke Weaver. I mean, I don't know how you try. Luke Weaver's been horrendous, you know. It's just
right, but they
it's really a little
hit.
Bit of everything, quite frankly. It really is.
Well, it's not. It's not the defense. It's not on the base paths. Not
it was the defense yesterday with Judge playing that into a triple.
Yeah, I know, but still, but the
keep
game,
the ball in front of you.
All understood. The game to me was out of control at that point.
What about the play down the line? And with I think Varsho hit that bullet to the right out of the reach of Ben Rice.
Yeah, you think he's a little slow getting it? I mean,
you think Goldschmidt knocks it down? You think an elite first baseman knocks it down? I don't know. I mean, it was hit hard. I want to be fair. Maybe if you were positioned better, so maybe that's a coaching thing because you didn't have a lot of time to react. But yeah, championship teams keep that ball in the infield.
I'm just saying it's not to me like, yes, obviously Judge with the error was a bad one, but it's not like I'm watching this team saying, well, they can't field the grounders. They're not throwing them, you know, they're throwing balls in the dirt. They're not, you know, the pass balls, catcher's interference, those sloppy things, dropping easy fly balls. That is not the main culprit here. Max Fried, your $218 million ace getting hit is a big problem. Aaron Judge, everybody else really in the lineup, almost to a man, they have not hit the way that they did in the regular season. Those are the biggest issues, whereas my main concern coming in was the sloppiness that they've played for years and the bullpen, and those two things to me haven't been the main culprit.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when the Yankees bottomed out during the regular season, no, they don't look like that now, where Volpe couldn't make a throw and they hadn't secured third base yet with McMahon. They were a disaster defensively. So, no, you're right. I mean, the defense is probably the least of the issues right now. Fried got bamboozled again. You know, and listen, even though Judge is hitting a soft four whatever, if the guys behind them did their job, we wouldn't focus on it as much.
Ben Rice does not look good.
No.
I got to be fair. I thought he was great. You know, I still believe he's their second best offensive player.
I still love him. He has not been that good.
He's been bad. I mean, that's what happens.
Stan's been worse.
And the difference with Stan is you expect him to be better because he's been proven before in the postseason. He's a veteran. And if he's not hitting, then what is he doing for
him? He's doing nothing.
Yeah. He's doing nothing. And the one time he does hit a double, he's pimping it like it's a home run. Let's get a Jets call in here, BT. Mike is in Old Bridge. What's up, Mike? Mm-hmm.
Guys, thanks for taking my call. I just want to rant on the New York Jets, who are an absolute disgrace. If you could please just give me a moment.
Oh, yeah.
So here we go. So now, Brandon, awesome podcast, Unkillable. All right, and that was pretty wild. Just watching that game yesterday. One of the things that I realized with the Jets is that if we gave Aaron Glenn, let's say, 2 or 3 victories this season, let's just say.
Okay.
So if we get three victories, we'd be looking at a 3-14 season. Now, next season, if they draft a rookie quarterback, which for all intents and purposes, they're going to have to do that. Fields holds the ball too long,
yep,
regardless of his athleticism. So now, next year, what would be the barometer? Realistically, you'd be back to square one, what you guys were saying earlier this season when Sal said maybe like that.
Uh-huh.
So now you'd add 3 wins this year,
yep,
another 5 wins maybe next year, and you can imagine what that record would look like.
Yep.
That would be a really losing record. Now, I understand people are going to reference Jimmy Johnson and some of these great coaches that started
even
off
Parcells with the Giants early.
And that's fair.
Yep.
And that's a fair point.
Okay.
But here's the thing. The game has greatly that a couple of years ago, the Commanders had the 2nd overall pick, okay? And they took Jaden Daniels, and basically the next season they were in the NFC Championship game. The modern NFL game, okay? The Jets need to think modern football. So they basically continue to hire these first-year, these first-time head coaches.
That's why they're idiots.
So Salah had the team playing slightly better than we've seen with Aaron Glenn. But here's the issue with Glenn that really, really worries me. He came in, and I really believed everything he was saying. And I'm going to still give him the benefit of the doubt because I really believe he's a quality human being, and he's a great leader of men. Just like Sal had mentioned.
But?
So I just want to say this last thing. But here's the deal. He's starting to look like all the other coaches at the podium. Deflated, defeated. Even he's out of answers. Yesterday, that tough demeanor after the game and the post game, that was not there. That tough guy stuff is almost gone.
Yep.
And in my personal opinion, the Jets need one thing. They need a franchise quarterback, but besides having a franchise quarterback, they need to really look closely at every single person in this organization. Because if this team does not win a game this year, or they win one game and they actually get that first pick over the Titans or over the Saints or over the Browns, do you really think, as a longtime fan like you are, just like I am, do you really think, and all these other Jets fans think, do you want Muji and Glenn making that pick? Because if you make that pick and he becomes a Zach Wilson-type quarterback, you would truly, you think 15 straight years without the playoffs is bad? This would set the franchise back many years. And one other point I want to make.
We got to let you go, Mike, and thank you for the call. We appreciate the passion here.
Yeah, but that was a good call.
Yeah, I mean, we'll let you go on for 5 minutes
that was
there.
A long one.
Had to cut it off at some point. Go ahead. You want to take that?
I was just going to say, Mike, I do see a path here or lane where 15 years could become 25 years. Where the Jets aren't in the playoffs. Like, I know it sounds inconceivable. Now, like, maybe the one advantage here is, like, even if the Jets finish 2nd overall and say the Titans are 1st, they just drafted Cam Ward, so you wouldn't think that the Titans would pick a quarterback, but they would be open for business, so maybe the Browns or somebody else jumps in front of them. Dude, I don't know what to think anymore, except, honestly, that the Jets are idiots. That's where I'm at. They're just losers top to bottom.
The thought about drafting a quarterback 1st overall and bringing him into this is frightening. That's not the recipe. And I think the biggest thing that our last caller said was that Glenn, and I agree with this, has not looked the way that he did prior to week 1, after week 1. Since then, it's been chipped away, chipped away, chipped away.
Yep.
to where he's almost...
He's a different person. It's a different presentation in 1 month.
And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The vicious Jets cycle has eaten people up and chewed them up, spit them out. All the time. Quarterbacks, head coach, all the time. Like, how many times do we need to see the same bleeping thing before we realize that it's an infrastructure problem and maybe that the media fans, like, doesn't help? I'm not saying that fans need to change whether they are, because they don't. It is what it is. But clearly there is a problem there. By the way, Washington turned when they had a new owner.
Yeah.
That's a big thing, too. Now, I'm not saying sell the team like we
Oh, I'd love to.
I know, but...
He's awful.
All I'm saying is they keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. It's why I was begging to hire an experienced head coach. But Glenn, no, I really believe Glenn at least has the right mentality. He's a guy that's worked his ass off.
Yep.
He was a player in this league that had success, a good player, worked his way up as a good, very good, if not great assistant coach. He wanted this opportunity, and I don't even think he knew the overhaul and the undertaking that is at hand here. And already 5 weeks in, and it was like this 2 weeks in, it was like, this team's awful, he sucks, and now everybody's doubting him. It's hard to maintain that confidence when you're not having the results in at least some way to back that up.
I'm pretty confident saying it's not him, it's them. They're idiots.
Right, but then... So
they don't know how to run a team. Woody is lost. The Jets' upper management and upper structure is pathetic, and it always has been. I mean, anytime they stumble upon success, it's basically because they stumbled upon success, not because the infrastructure was right. They're the worst, most pathetic franchise in sports. Period. That's it.
This Toronto bullpen is very hittable. Mm-hmm. Very, very hittable. And if you go back to game one, when the Blue Jay bullpen did do a pretty good job, most of it from Brendan Little and Jeff Hoffman and even Sir Anthony Dominguez, it was done once the Blue Jays opened this game up. You know, I still trust the Yankee bats, especially at Yankee Stadium, against the likes of Varland and Dominguez and Hoffman and Little and Flew Hardy. Like, this is not a fierce bullpen. And I think once you get to it, the bats are going to explode. That's mm-hmm. number one. Number two, I have great respect for Shane Bieber. He's only made 3 postseason starts in his career, 2 of them, coincidentally, against the Yankees. This is still a guy coming off Tommy John.
Yeah.
This is still a guy who's only made 7 or 8 starts coming off of Tommy John. I have a confidence, more than anything, Teague, in the Yankee offense breaking out, especially at Yankee Stadium. The question's going to be, what does Rodon do? What does Schlittler do if they get to a game 4? The bullpen getting enough outs. But the area where I do have confidence, and maybe it's because of the runs they exploded for late in game 2, the 7 runs they scored in the last 4 innings.
Yeah.
I think they're going to hit, and I think it is very premature from the Yankee fan to think they're done and from the Yankee hater to be dancing on their grave.
Well, I don't think the Yankee fan wants to think they're done. It's just the frustration of these first couple of games. They've been non-competitive, at least as the score has pertained to. And yeah, Shane Bieber's coming off Tommy John surgery, but it still doesn't mean he's not going to rise to the occasion because of the emotion that's around this Blue Jays team. I know that's an intangible thing because baseball doesn't feel like the emotion takes precedence. Like, think about football. It's an emotional game. It's a physical game. There's ways to get guys jacked up or ready in different ways than hitting a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Whereas in baseball, it really is like it's being dialed in. And there's an attention to the details that matter. If you're a Yankee fan, despite everything that you just said, it just feels like the attention to the details aren't there for this Yankee team. So it's hard to be optimistic. So you're right. What your optimism is correct. I think it's just hard for the Yankee fan to see it.
And mine is, and I wouldn't even define it as optimism. It's just being honest about what I still think this team is capable of doing and who they're facing. I'm just being honest. Now, it's a baseball game. Crazy crap happens. Like, I don't think any of us expected that Trey Savage was going to take a no-hitter into the 6th inning and strike out 11 guys.
No.
I did the moment I saw his mom pounding tall boys in the crowd.
I gave it away.
Oh, he was raised right.
Yeah. I looked at her. I'm like, that's a mom.
That's a man from a farm in Pennsylvania. That's his origins. But who saw that coming other than Sean? Who saw Schlittler dominating the way he did in game 3? So baseball is a weird, weird game. But I don't believe this Yankee offense, the best offense in baseball throughout the regular season, is just going to get shut down, especially by a lot of the mediocre pitching that the Toronto Blue Jays have. But like I said at the top, the moment's going to find Aaron Judge, and he's got to put his mark on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the best way to define Judge's postseason, because to say it's crappy is not fair. Like, if you're 8-for-18 and you're hitting .444, you're obviously
not
producing.
Crappy. It's just non-impactful.
And that's the key. It's not impactful, and he hasn't let his stamp be felt in this postseason. It just hasn't happened yet.
No.
And sometimes you need that moment to find you. He had it in game one. It was right there.
Right.
The whole game was going to flip. I thought it was going to flip. I think most of us probably thought it was going to flip. And yes, his teammates didn't back him up with Ben Rice and Giancarlo Stanton not coming through either. But when it's bases loaded, nobody out, early in a series in which if you win game one and you got Max Fried on the mound against a rookie in game two, imagine the confidence level
right.
and how everything could change. That's why I don't buy this crap. Well, they were going to lose 10-5 anyway. You don't know that. Everything could have played out differently. And unfortunately, and as that pitch was thrown by Gausman, we all knew it was ball four.
It was a ball out of his hands.
Did you not scream at the TV, ball four?
Oh, immediately. You knew it was a ball out of his hands. But again, this is just the microcosm of being who Aaron Judge is. We're just going to solely focus on that bat. And as much as it enrages us, it's just they had other opportunities to get runs.
He's entitled to a bad at-bat.
Exactly.
In a series.
Especially in this postseason.
But the reason why none of those answers work is because of the resume over the last 6 years.
Okay.
This is not his first postseason. If it was, I'd be with you. I'd say, you're right. Yeah, whatever. It's baseball. Sometimes you don't come through. I get that. It's just that this has been going on for a while. Let's get to your calls. 888-808-1019. Toll-free number. Let's kick it off with Artie in Rockland. Good afternoon, Artie.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
What's up, man?
Listen, I want to tell you something. This guy, Jason Dominguez, who came up as a five-tool potential superstar, has been on the roster now postseason twice, this year and last year. And he's a natural center fielder. Grisham's batting .150 with 8 strikeouts. It's 12-0. 12-0 yesterday.
Mm.
You can't give the kid an at-bat. You can't put him in the outfield for a few innings. It's 12-0. Are you serious? Why can't they let him bat one time?
So and if you do that, I want to ask you, if you do that, are you doing that as a gateway to eventually him starting game three? Is that what you're thinking?
I got news for you. If it was up to me, I would sit Grisham for the entire rest of the postseason and let this kid get his feet.
Here's the problem.
I mean, it might happen because Aaron Boone, when asked about it today, he said, look, he's considering lineup changes.
Here's the problem with that lineup change. Whether Boone does it or not, I'm going to give you my honest opinion.
Yeah.
The guy started 4 games since September started. He has had 20 plate appearances since September started.
Yeah.
They've buried him. If all of a sudden now on October 6th, when the guy has had no role as a starter.
It's unfair to him. No, you're
right. Of course it is. What do you think's going to happen, Magic?
I do think, though, if you want to be real to his point, is Jason Dominguez a building block for the future of this team? Because if he is in those spots, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to give him 2 at-bats in a playoff game just to kind of feel the end.
That's a different story. And that's why my question to Artie was, what's your plan with this?
Right.
Is it, hey, it's a blowout, let me get him experience because it's a gateway to game three? If it's a gateway to game three, I will say this respectfully, it's a panic idea. The guy's had 20 plate appearances in over a month. And the Mets were forced into that, remember, with Ronnie Mauricio?
Right.
And I think one of the reactions was, boy, well, you don't play a guy for a month. What the hell do you expect? This is the same thing, except worse, because you'd be doing it on your own. You'd be making the decision. And I get it. Trent Grisham hasn't been him. He hasn't been the guy.
He's become Sam Darnold with the Vikings. Had this great career year out of nowhere. You got to the end of the year, and now he's just turned back into a pumpkin.
I get it, but do you want to sit him for a guy who's had 20 plate appearances in a month?
No, but you know what? It's more of an offseason, bigger picture thing. What the Yankees did with Jason Dominguez this year, and look, Grisham earned the right to play, is going to ultimately, if he ends up being ruined and not what we thought, we're going to look back and realize what a disgrace they were to Dominguez this year.
Yeah, but it's hard to do that.
Now, you can't.
You can't, because when you look at it in real time, when you remember it in real time, meaning in during the regular season, Trent Grisham was fantastic.
I agree.
He had a breakout year, so to speak, especially offensively. Defensively, he's always been good. We know that. But offensively, he was a marvel. So you can't second guess it.
I agree.
His postseason has sucked, but you can't second guess what he did in the regular season. That would be unfair to Trent Grisham.
And he doesn't have a postseason track record of shrinking. He actually had an incredible run in 2022 with San Diego.
Yeah.
So it's not as if, the moment's too big for Trent Grisham. It's just replacing him with a guy that's barely played in a month. Definition of a panic move.
That would be desperate.
Yeah. Julio is calling from Queens. What's up, Julio?
Hey, Julio.
Hey, guys. I'm a big fan. I just want to say about Judge, I'm not really disappointed in him, well, a little bit disappointed in him, because I know in years past we always said that he doesn't hit in postseason. But honestly, we're not asking him to hit. We're asking him to be Aaron Judge, hitting home runs, hitting RBIs, extra base hits. But my biggest problem right now is not really Aaron Judge, more with Giancarlo, Trent, and Ben Reiser kind of have been kind of quiet. My biggest problem is here is with the batting coach is like our team can't stay off. They just swing and miss.
Well, right. You know, and I mentioned this to Tiki yesterday. We were talking a little bit about this game. Their approach against Kevin Gausman on Saturday was really surprising. And that was to hack early. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about the amount of guys, and I could actually tell you the answer because I scored it, but think about the amount of guys that swung at the first pitch.
Yeah.
It was a complete strategy shift against Kevin Gausman, a guy who a bunch of Yankees have had success against, including Aaron Judge. And so they were hacking early, very early against him, against Treya Savage, who obviously they don't have experience with. It's all new. He's got a very different windup. How many fastballs right down the middle did they take for strike one? Which only set up his devastating splitter for them to be chasing after, which was constant, whether it was Cody Bellinger, it was Ben Rice. I mean, they were swinging through splitters in the dirt constantly. Yeah. Like, their chase was off the charts, but it was all set up, Teague, because they took the exact opposite approach in game two, in which they were taking pitch one constantly.
Which doesn't make any sense, because what worked in the wild card series was exactly what they did in game one of this series. Swing it, first pitch, right? Didn't we talk about this with Ben Rice with his home run in the first inning when he finally got off the bench? He smashed it, first pitch, right? And so I think it's a we don't know enough about this kid to know what he's going to do. He's probably scared of you, so he's going to throw the first one in the dirt. So don't swing at it.
Yeah.
When in fact, you should have seen from just his swagger that he wasn't scared of anything.
Oh, no. He was
game in his game as well.
Hold on. We're going to instant replay.
Yes.
They are saying the ruling on the field stands. He did not say the wrong word. It just may have sounded that way. All right, continue on.
It's all good. It was
that was it?
Unless you're on hold, you didn't hear it.
You dumped it?
Reminder.
No.
We can't have curses on the radio. I know it's funny. I know you think it's hilarious.
No.
But we can't tell the FCC, well, Evan thinks it makes for a better radio show if we curse.
Now, let me tell you why. Cam Schlittler is a human being.
Yes, he is.
If someone makes a mistake, like Tiki almost made, but Tommy was too handsy on the dump button for anyone to hear, that's a part of the game.
It's not a part of the game.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.